Major Han Reel 5. You were saying that you didn't see any air activity before the 10th of May.
No, on the morning of the 10th, early morning, we were overtaken by a very, very heavy bombing in the ship, and this first bombing we had heard. And I think Abbeville, I think it's the nearest, but that would be right in saying Abbeville, that's the place we assumed anyway. The airfields were being bombed.
There were airfields at Abbeville, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that was close to the fairly close to where we were, I think. And that's what we heard. And that was the first indication that something was happening. Then the word came down, right, be ready to move in 2 hours. And so we were ready to move to the right up frontier. And
now, you're saying that you knew that you were going to go forward into Belgium to meet the enemy. Mm. Did you have maps of Belgium?
Not at that time. It wasn't until the day that we were issued with them.
Ah. And what sort of maps were they when they were issued?
They were walking in some miles and like that. They weren't there.
Did they show the terrain, or were they just road maps?
Mainly road maps.
Do you remember if they were a particular type? Were they a military map or commercial? I don't remember if they were Michelin maps.
No, I don't think they were Michelin maps. But we, as I say, we moved out from before I forget, on the back of my armoured car, there was a bit of a beam. We had the top come down, and there was about 18 inches at the back where the beams were. And on the back of that, I had strapped a basket with six pigeons and carry pigeons.
Is that part of your duties as signals?
Yeah.
And had you had those for long, those pigeons?
They were brought to us that morning. Oh. And they'd been headquarters. And so they were on the back. If there was any breakdown of signals, then the message would be tied to the foot. And I think they were due to fly back to the Lille or Arras, I'm not sure which, but that's the secret only known to the pigeon.
As their home loft, yes.
And you can't imagine it today, really, can you?
It's difficult, but it would have been difficult to imagine it then, wouldn't it, before they turned up. I was going to ask if you had any sort of backup system of carrying messages like dispatch riders or anything of that sort.
It's when you had dispatch riders. I think we had, there was one per troop.
Yes.
A dispatch rider, and I think two in squadron headquarters.
So you had a number of...
We had a number of motorbikes.
They could go back, couldn't they, down the line of command?
That's right, yes.
To report. Mm.
And, in fact, we lost a number of motorcycles being shot by the enemy. We were ready to go, I think. And we moved up about 9 o'clock in the morning or something like that. Might have been 7. And straight through to the Berlin border. They opened up the thing and they went straight on around Brussels. Thousands of people came out to cheer us on and pass some bottles of wine and flowers, and it was all slowed us down quite a bit to get through. And eventually, we got the far side of Brussels. We then could motor on, and we found it a very, very hot day, and the tyres on some of the vehicles started to melt.
Melt?
Mm. So, like, turned to jelly.
Could you do anything about that?
What we did was to stop now and again and throw water onto the tires, what we did. It didn't all, but in certain ones. I think the speed and the very hot day, the friction on the roads or something. And I think we had, in our squadron, about 4 or 5. And in fact, we jacked that one vehicle, took the tyres off to use it to replace it. We didn't carry a spare tyre.
You didn't have spare tyres?
No. To jack it up and replace it. And then, of course, the echelon came along and then replaced the tyres.
Would this be the regimental echelon?
Yes.
So they had spare tyres there.
And so that's what happened, so we could get on. But it was an unusual time, so they were, bulletproof, obviously. But they just sort of went back like a jelly, the heat. That's only time. It didn't happen later. That's only on the approach, which probably you're probably going 50 mile an hour perhaps.
Faster than curve, presumably.
And that, you see, and that's where the heat's a bit of that.
Friction, yes. Mm. Yeah. What did you think of the Belgian road system?
Well, that was good. That road was certainly from Belgium up to through the vein.
That's because you went up via Leuven out towards Tilt, didn't you?
East,
yes. Yeah. Heading towards the northeast.
That's right.
Towards the Meuse.
Yes. We got to the Dyle, and then we went on from the Dyle further forward, which was anyway, as far as we could get before we came to the end, which was east, and that was the other place. And that's it.
Tienen is another town in that area. Yes.
Yes.
Well, it's called Tilt in French, I think, and Tienen in Flemish.
Yes, that was the place. Mm. And of course, Beach was there, Tienen was back here.
Yes, yes.
And our first encounter was with the French cavalry, with the German cavalry, or if they weren't cavalry, they were mounted infantry. Because they had mounted infantry.
Yes, they did.
And that was the first, our first contact.
On your way up into Belgium, did you travel in a move in a tactical formation?
No, we just went on as fast as we could as a squadron.
What about intervals between vehicles? Did you keep intervals?
Oh, we always did. We'd been trained in that sort of thing.
Road movement.
That you would keep a good distance between each vehicle.
What sort of distance would that be then, if you were just doing an ad?
On a road like that, I should say at least 100 yards between, 150 yards between each vehicle.
And you were going flat out at about 50 miles an hour.
Yeah. Mm.
When you were doing this, did you see any air activity?
No, not at that stage. Mm. It wasn't until we got further up towards
What about radio? Did you have radio silence, or were you using
the... until we got close up.
Right. So if you'll move up towards through Brussels and beyond, you were...
radio silence, yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't until we got, I think, almost to this area that we saw any sign of any bombing. And it shows how innocent I was at the time. We were on a farmyard. And my armor car was at one side, and the second command was about 25 yards if that way, not that perhaps, inside the farmyard. And I was on standing at the side of the outside with the earphones on. The squadron leader was over talking to the second command, and just the crew outside of it. And I looked up and I saw two planes coming across. And it looked as though they were chasing, one was chasing the other. It looked to me like that, anyway. And then I saw this one plane drop something. And I looked at it, looked to me just like a beer crate.
Oh.
You see? And I. And of course, when the earphones on with all the cracker and that, you didn't. And I just turned and I said, it's just dropped something. Because when you've got the earphones on, you shout, don't you? Mm. And I shouted it. And I watched this thing go down. And then there was tremendous explosion on the other side of the farmhouse. And all this happened over the top, and the bubble and whatnot started to drop all around. I turned down and I said, it's a bomb. And there wasn't a soul in sight.
They'd all taken cover.
They'd all taken cover.
And you hadn't taken cover.
It must have said, my word, what an idiot we've got here. But that was the innocence of it, you see. We hadn't experienced it. And to me, it wasn't really new. It was still an exercise, really. And so,
do you think there are many men in the regiment who had that same sort of feeling at the time, that it was not a reality?
It took a long time. It wasn't until you saw one of your friends killed that you realised, by the way, this is
serious business.
It is, yeah. And that's when it brings it home to you. Mm. I think, but until then, you'd have no idea of what war was really like. Mm.
So how long did it take you to actually get up onto the, you know, your deployment area?
I think that day, by the next day, we were there.
Did you travel all through the night, or did you stop
in
the night?
No, we stopped a bit. We did some a bit in the dark.
Yes.
But we were getting to our position by the next morning.
So it was a day and a half. And did you see anything, any refugees? On the way out. Had you seen anything of the Belgian army on your way up?
No. Once we got up there, we started meeting them up where we first had contact with the Germans. Mm-hmm.
What did you make of the Belgians when you saw them? Belgian army.
We didn't have a lot of opinion about them because we hadn't had time to really.
They were just there.
They were there, and they had their job to do, which they didn't tell me, but they told the troop leaders what their job was. Mm. And so we couldn't form an opinion, really, because we didn't have that much contact with them.
So you were saying that you went up beyond Tienen, you were in the area towards the east. Yeah. What was the countryside like in that area? What do you
very,
think of that?
Rather close country.
Close country.
Close country, yes. Because in that time the lava plain and all the trees were there. So it was a difficult country to get observe a lot.
You couldn't get a panoramic view then?
Not really. Unless you got onto a hill, but then you were limited to how much you could see because all the roads were covered with trees and things like that. But our job was to go up to the river line and find the bridges and hold the bridges.
On the Meuse?
Yes, and so you could blow them up. And that's when the enemy came up, mainly on motorcycles, where you could shoot them. They seemed to come straight up, no tactical movement at all. They were just motor up and to be shot at.
You were saying the first Germans you saw were actually cavalry or mounted infantry.
One of the horses.
Where was that? Was that before you got
on the river?
That was on the river. So you got to the River Meuse.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And what sort of positions did you take up when you got there?
I'm just covering the bridges, covering the river, or whatever, wherever we could, to defend the bridge.
Did you cross the river?
No.
So you stayed on the west bank.
That's right. Yes.
Mm. And did you manage to get behind any sort of cover to?
Well, whatever cover there was. Mm.
Do you remember what there was there with your own vehicle?
Trees.
So it's trees along the riverbank.
That's right, yes. Mm. And as I say, the field of fire wasn't all that good. When they came up to the bridge, that you would get a field of fire. Mm.
Could you see them on the far side? You didn't have to wait till they came over to your side.
Oh, yes, you could see them as they were approaching the bridge. That's why
I see. Yes.
You see, but they used to come on. But then the bridge would be blown, and we had a Lieutenant Smith of the RE's attached to his engine.
Ah, right. He was attached to your squadron?
To the regiment.
To the regiment.
He had a tremendous RE to cover, and he was going everywhere, blowing bridges. He was fantastic. He really was.
So you got into position on the bridge.
Incidentally, if you can find his name,
yes.
John Clark Kennedy would know where he is now.
Yes.
And He would be a mine of information about blowing the bridges
in
the MC for his work.
Did he have anyone to help him?
He had a he had his troop, his RE troop. So I don't know how many he had. He probably troop would be about 9 or 10, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you, have you got any notion of how long it would take him to actually prepare a bridge for blowing?
No, it depends like, on the size of the bridge. Mm. And some of them were prepared.
Ah.
But they prepared, but not very well in some cases, where they didn't want them long, I think, later. So I couldn't tell you anything about how long it would take to do it.
I mean, were there any Belgian engineers about preparing the bridges?
Were.
For?
Yes, there were. There were, but some of them were reluctant to...
To blow the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were saying that you got your chute across the bridge when the enemy approached it from the east bank. What sort of range were you engaging them, these targets?
Just beyond
the guns. So really, just literally just across the river.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said the first... How many of these cavalry were there who turned up?
Well, we only managed to get one of them, and we got the horse as well. And because there was a lot of talk about getting the horse back
as a prisoner of war.
The stables, the regiment said, because they thought the war would be over in about 6 weeks or so.
Mm.
So we thought that would be an addition to the regimental stables. So there was quite a lot of talk on the radio about this horse.
What about the rider? Was he? Was he?
He was killed.
He was killed. So the rider was killed and the horse was captured.
That's right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How many of these cavalrymen were there altogether? Do you think?
I think they came in about six at a time, and you shoot whatever.
Sounds like an advanced picket, doesn't it?
Yes, right. Yes, and then the infantry would come along on motorbikes. A lot of them would come in on motorbikes, and as soon as you'd leave the bridge, then you'd see them. Infiltrating round the sides to try to get round you.
Mm.
You know, so being close country, you'd see them within.
But on the far bank, trying to get across.
They managed to get across the river in some cases. See, in some cases, you might find it wasn't a very wide river. And in some cases, they could get round, there'd be a little thing on track of the river, and they'd go round across the fields and whatnot and come in behind you. Side of you over a farm, so a bridge, which we obviously couldn't cover all of them. And so you'd see them coming through the fields, the infantry, through the woods and whatnot, you see. So that would be the indication eventually that you'd have to withdraw.
I mean, so the first one of these bridges you were at was at Deest.
Yes.
Near Deest. So that one was blown successfully.
And each squadron were doing the same thing.
Oh, I see, yeah.
See, and probably each troop would have, say, might have two bridges.
Mm.
You see, so that right along the whole particular front, there could be half a dozen of these bridges. And these were being blown by different
teams. Do you recollect how many bridges I'm thinking more about the first instance.
The
one at Deest.
The one at Deest, and then I think A squadron.
Mm.
C squadron. And they probably all threw up one or two.
Yes.
It's just whatever was there to slow them down.
Mm. So having blown the bridge, I mean, was the idea that you would withdraw as soon as you'd blown the bridge, or that you'd...
No, you could hold the bridge as long as you could. Once you blew it,
yes.
If you could sort of delay them,
yeah.
You would delay. But when you found that they were, say, like they'd get a pontoon or something further down the river and come across, then there's a limit to how long you want to be there without being cut off.
All right, so as soon as you knew you were outflanked, you would be, you'd pull back. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
But you would do that on command of the IHQ or squadron. You would make up his mind, say, right, draw back to the next defensive line or next river or whatever that you could do.
So
within that sector of the squadron area.
So you'd gone as far forward as near Deest. That was your first position. Yeah. And how long were you at that position before you started falling back to the next defensible line?
I think by that evening.
Yeah. So you got there. Did you get there in the morning or in the morning?
Yes, I think by the evening you were.
By the evening you were pulling back.
Yeah.
Did you have to actually fight your way through any of these infantry who were trying to get around behind you?
You could see them, and you just had to watch, because they later they got right behind you and they come up amongst all the refugees and that sort of thing. Yeah, so they were a danger of the odd
ambush.
But I think by about 6 o'clock in the evening we were coming back along different bridges.
Where did you pull back to then initially? Do you remember where you stopped on the way back?
In line, you know, and different river bridges. I can't sort of recall the names much.
No, it's all right. They
didn't mean very much.
No.
Thing, you see? So, being a lot of French names, you wouldn't.
So I can get this right, and presumably you would have a reasonable picture of what the squadron was doing because you were the centre of the communications,
you know,
weren't you?
Was and what
So
you would get that back, and all of them were pretty heavily engaged. Each group had the same area to cover.
So they'd be putting fire down across the river until the bridge was blown, and then when they were compromised,
and then when the squadron leader and or the regiment, you wouldn't move back until the colonel had sort of given, because otherwise, if you had got back, you could have left somebody's flank exposed. So you would have to do it when the colonel said, "Right, drop back to the next river."
You had to conform to other squadrons. And the river lines were regarded as being the essential boundaries. Now, as far as I remember it, there isn't very much really between the streams towards the Meuse, and then the Dyle is the next.
That's right. Yes.
Did you stop on the Dyle itself?
Yes. For how long I can't say. Was anything by then? You know, it was all good. And for the first 4 days and nights, I hadn't slept. I didn't close my eyes for 4 days.
Because you were just moving all the time.
I was on the
air. Yes.
And I was talking all the time. And I know for 4 days and 4 nights, I didn't close my eyes once. I was pretty shattered by then. Then we were pulled back after about 4 days. And we got half a night's sleep. Then we were back again.
So 4 days... Do you remember where you were at the end of that 4 days after you had you gone west of the Dyle, or were you still?
I think we were pushed back to the Dyle.
Yeah.
About then.
Yes. So round about the late on the 13th, early on the 14th, you were back, because you'd had a day and a half moving up, hadn't you?
Yes.
And presumably you didn't get much rest.
No.
Then, and then half a day or so around the area of Diest, and then falling back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we got to the Dyle.
Yeah.
That's where we managed to get a bit of a sleep.
Yeah, because you'd have been able to go through our own positions there.
Right. Yeah.
Do you remember seeing any British troops when you went through?
1518, I think.
Hussars,
yes.
So they were divisional recce, weren't they?
Right, yes.
Yeah.
And they sort of had the light tank.
Yes.
Which still only had the light guns on them. And because after that, we went from the Dyle, we went down southwest of Brussels.
Right. So do you know what were they in the same sort of role as you were in, the divisional recce regiments that you saw on your way through?
I think they were more in a defensive role.
Oh, I see.
We did the recce, and they came back, and I think they were probably bolstering up with the infantry.
So there's sort of outposts. Yes.
Support them.
Did you see anything of our infantry positions at all?
We saw some of them as we passed through different regiments. I can't tell you which regiments they were, but we saw them as they came. At times when we got back to a river line, they would then come through us.
Yes.
To go to the back
and hold the line. But did you see them on the Dyle when you crossed?
I didn't actually see them, but they were there.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, it sounds to me as though your role on the river, where you were holding the bridges, was really putting you into defensive role rather than pure recce. It wasn't just observation.
Sort of could then pass back the strengths and whatever you saw.
Yes,
at the same time, you were doing your best to delay.
Hold them up.
That's right. And then you weren't strong enough to fight them.
No.
We didn't have the equipment.
Didn't have the firepower.
That's right.
When you were in this forward role, sort of the scouting role, and you were trying to hold the bridges, did you come under any artillery or mortar fire while you were...
No, but there was sort of bombing.
Bombing?
There was bombing. Not to a great extent, really, the odd bomb, but there weren't a lot of fire directed onto our positions. Mm. I think probably because we were so close to them.
Yes.
That they couldn't do it.
No safety margin.
That's right, you see. Mm. And so, and as we were coming back at times, then we were being bombed.
Mm. Do you know if the squadron suffered any damage or casualties?
Our squadron didn't. Our squadron, they lost a number by aircraft machine bombing. Actually, my opposite number in A squadron was killed. He was both friend of mine who started on the same course as me. You know, we grew up together, sort of thing.
In the regiment.
In the regiment, he was killed. And A squadron lost 3 or 4 of them by air attack.
Did you see anything of German armoured cars or light armour when you were pulling back?
Not at that time.
Not before the dial.
Right. Yeah. We saw a lot of aircraft, hundreds and hundreds of them, aircraft flying over to attack either Antwerp or Bayer's base. But, I mean, the sky used to be absolutely black, and the room of them. I've never seen so many aircraft. Just one big masses of them going in.
And all enemy. No sign of
guards.
So you got back behind the dial, and then you were saying you went south, slightly southwest.
Near
Waterloo. On the old, yes.
We lost an armoured car, then up on a mine there. That was John Clark Kennedy.
On a mine? The battlefield of Waterloo?
Yeah. And what I think it was, one of our own. Because Peter Mundy had put a mine down, and said to John, I'm going off so and so, because John was in the same area where they were watching, and I think he'd be all over there.
That was bad luck.
It was, But, of course, the Germans then were coming up all sides then. They'd come up, from the south.
Yes.
And so they were sort of really cutting us off.
Yeah. So you got west of the dial, and what sort of arrangement did you make for having your first kit then after you got...
Out of immediate contact. Back.
Yes.
We just called back after 4 days, and we just kept wherever we could. And I think they'd arranged a regimental meal.
Hot meal.
The central cookhouse had done something, and we had a meal, and then had a few hours sleep, and then we were shoved off again. Just no time at all. And then sleep then was sort of done. Whenever you could snatch a few hours, it wasn't the case. And I don't remember really getting down to have a sleep. If I could snatch a few hours sort of sitting down or whatever, that was it.
How much do you think you need as a sort of absolute minimum if you're going to keep going, the sort of role you were performing at that time? Yes. What could you get by on?
You could do 24 hours without sleep, I think. I think when you were young, you could. But in that particular case, I think I went 4 days. But you were pretty shattered at the end of it. And then I think if you could snatch a couple of hours in the morning and probably a couple of hours late evening, that, of course, you can carry on. If you're young, you're fit, you're healthy. But I think other people... I mean, the squad leader used to doze off quite a lot. I'd have to often sort of wake him up and say, this, that, and the other, and that's it. I think it depends on how fit you are and how healthy you are.
I mean, did you know of other cases of people just dozing off? as a result of extreme fatigue.
Oh yes, I've seen that happen. Yeah, when I've seen the whole squadron asleep.
A whole squadron?
All at once. In their armoured cars, absolutely shattered, where we've had, again, no sleep for about 3 nights on the desert. And I've been up and down the line, sort of thing. The rear one was most important, too.